You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Cool. Sorry about that. Kia ora, Marcus. How are you going?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. It's been, a hectic morning, as usual, but that is the way of the newsroom. But it's good to have you back in studio joining us. First of all, gun violence research in the US that is obviously a very hot button topic at the moment, but apparently they're not doing enough.
Well, until recently, they weren't doing anything.
So there you go.
So, and so that's sort of the problem. There's an awful lot of questions that have not been addressed in terms of gun violence in the U.S. Hmm. And the gun, as most of you probably know, the U.S. is stricken with repeated shootings and a very, very high level of gun violence. And this recent shooting in Uvalde in the southern part of Texas is just another example of this awful chain of incidents. Mm. And I mean, the US has an awful lot of guns, but it's not by no means the only country to have an awful lot of guns. I mean, New Zealand has a fair amount, and there's other countries, Switzerland and Europe and other places, have a pretty high level of gun ownership. And but barring a few exceptions, there isn't the same level of these mass shootings. And so part of the movement now is to try and understand what's going on in America that is unique to America and what can be done to change it. And this has been hampered because funding was effectively kneecapped in 1996 when Congress barred the CDC from spending any money at all to advocate or promote gun control, which effectively means that they couldn't study the effect of guns in society and what could be done to fix these problems. Mm. And that changed recently in 2020. Lawmakers set aside $25 million for the CDC and the NIH, the National Institute of Health, to study this issue. And there's some money for research, but it's still massively underfunded compared with research for cancer or other diseases that kill children and kill, people and the similar sort of rate to gun violence.
Yeah, and it was recently found that guns are actually the number one killer of children now. It's overtaken, I think, motor vehicles.
Yeah, and this is another horrible statistic. I mean, the question is, child deaths from guns, are they increasing in the US? And the answer is actually yes. Some recent research showed that it's now the number one cause of death among children who lived through infancy. Several years ago, it was number two, and since then, the country's continued to take this turn for the worse. And it's not just in these mass shootings. There's everyday gun violence
And accidents as well.
And accidents and all sorts of things.
Yeah, gun safety is quite awful there as well.
And so now more scientists are studying gun violence. So 3, 4, or 5 years ago, there were just a very, very few scientists studying this problem, and people were very nervous. It was difficult to get academic scholars to be comfortable studying it. But now there's this bubbling up of people who are pivoting towards this issue and this pressing problem. And there's been a national conference, and scientists have come together and started to talk about it. And this is maybe a sign for hope and progress. But the funding is not enough to match the interest. Compared to cancer or any other serious cause of death among children in particular, it's still exponentially underfunded. And they're not even talking about the underfunding of gun deaths among the rest of the population. This $25 million is a great commitment, but it's not even nearly enough. With more funding, there could be so much more done. They need to study how to store guns, how we reduce access for young people who are at risk of suicide. They need to understand how extreme risk protection orders, or sometimes called red flag laws, which restrict gun possessions or purchase at risk individuals, are being used. Which part of them may be working? What happens when temporary restriction periods run out, and so on. And with the tragic shooting in Texas, the need to understanding how those sort of things impact the community going forward is even more pressing. So there's hope that there may be some change in gun violence or the regulation of guns in America. But whether there's a political will is still to be decided.
Well, it's just because gun culture is so entrenched in US culture, is pretty much synonymous, and kind of really hard to believe that research is only just being conducted, or comprehensive-ish research is only just being. Jeez, not a good time to be an American at the moment.
No.
Moving on, monkeypox. Right, so I think everyone's a little bit antsy with, a potential other outbreak of some mystery virus from animals. And clearly, after 2 years of quite awful pandemic vibes, but monkeypox, is there anything to be concerned about? What do we know and what don't we know?
The answer is probably not. And this is not going to be a pandemic on the scale of COVID. Thank God.
Not another one. Back to back.
No. Scientists are racing to understand these latest outbreaks from their origins and to where they can, whether they can be contained or not. It's been 3 weeks, a little more than 3 weeks, nearly 4 weeks now, confirmed since authorities confirmed a case of monkeypox in the UK. And since that point, more than 400 confirmed or suspected cases have emerged in at least 20 non-African nations, including Canada, Portugal, Spain, and the UK. The largest outbreak ever outside of Africa. And this has put people on alert. There's no obvious link between many of the clusters. And this raises the possibility of undetected local transmission of the virus. And so there's some questions. Probably the biggest question is how on earth did this start? And since the latest outbreaks began, researchers have tried to sequence genomes from people with the monkeypox who have been infected with monkeypox in a few countries. And the most important insight they've gained so far is that each of the sequences closely resembles that of a strain found in Western Africa. This strain is less lethal. Thank goodness. It has a death rate below 1% in some poor rural populations in Africa, which is better than another strain, which has which is more prevalent in Central Africa, which has a death rate of up to 10%. So it's not a nice thing. And there have been some clues as to how the outbreak may have begun, but more data really is needed to confirm suspicions. The current sequences are most similar to those from a scattering of monkeypox cases that arose outside of Africa in 2018 and 2019, and they were linked to travel in Western Africa. The simplest explanation is that the person who had the first non-African case this year, who's still not identified, became infected through contact with an animal or a human carrying the virus whilst visiting a similar part of Africa. But other explanations can't be ruled out. It's possible that the virus was already circulating undetected outside of Africa in humans or animals, but it's less likely because it does tend to cause visible lesions on people's bodies, which would probably be brought to attention of a physician.
It's like less kind of COVID, you know, you have people coughing and stuff, so you'd obviously avoid them on crowded buses and trains and planes, but I think it's a lot easier to avoid someone with like gashes and lesions all over their body, right?
Right. Well, it's clearer to the person who is infected that they've been infected,
hopefully.
I guess.
That is true.
An interesting thing. So there's possible genetic changes in the virus, but they don't really understand the genome. Apparently, the monkeypox genome is enormous relative to that of most other viruses. It's more than six times larger than the genome for the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And therefore, it's at least six times harder to analyze. So they're still trying to understand the genome and how it sort of all works. The outbreaks, whether the outbreaks can be contained, is another question. A course of action that will probably be undertaken is to offer smallpox vaccines, which are thought to protect against monkeypox infections. And if administered within 4 days of exposure, these can be effective. So if deployed, the vaccines were probably applied using a sort of a ring vaccination strategy, which would inoculate close contacts of the infected people. But it might be worth considering in vaccinating groups that are at a higher risk of infection in addition to the close contacts. And finally, the question is the virus spreading differently now compared with previous outbreaks? In other words, is it behaving differently? Why have we suddenly got this big outbreak? It's known to spread through close contacts. So either close contact with the lesions, bodily fluids, respiratory droplets of infected people, or animals. But health officials have been examining sexual activity at two raves in Spain and Belgium as drivers of monkeypox transmission. And cases linked to sexual activity don't necessarily mean that the virus is more contagious or is transmitted sexually. However, just that the virus spreads readily through close contact. So the question is it now more virulent or can it spread more easily than previously? And they're still trying to figure that one out.
I mean, we say this every week on Dear Science, but as usual, it's just kind of keeping an eye on things as they develop, because
absolutely,
science and news is just constantly happening. Our final topic for today, yawning, okay? And please don't yawn when we talk about this, but it is really interesting. I do think yawns are contagious, right? But I don't know, people seem to think it's a myth.
Well, no, it's definitely contagious, and I challenge you to. I will probably yawn through this story. I challenge you to listen to this and not.
Jack's just
there we go. We started already.
Thank God it's radio.
So it's quite interesting. If yawning probably arose with the evolution of jawed fish about 400 million years ago, there are many stories, many myths, and people think about yawning and. One of them, a long-standing myth, is does yawning increase blood oxygen levels? Are we doing it to try and suck in more oxygen?
Get more and alert,
yeah. Yeah, and the answer is no. Despite this sort of continued belief, research has explicitly tested that hypothesis, and the results have concluded that breathing and yawning are controlled by different mechanisms. For example, there are really interesting cases of yawning in marine mammals where the yawning occurs while the animal is submerged underwater and therefore not breathing. So what does yawning actually do to the body? So it's quite a complicated reflex. It's triggered under a variety of contexts and neurophysiological changes. Primarily occurs during periods of state change, commonly following transitions from sleeping and waking. So the research also, so obviously when you're tired, you yawn. There's research that also suggests that yawns are initiated alongside increases in cortical arousal. So yawns themselves may function to promote alertness. And there's a growing body of research that suggests that yawning is triggered by rises in brain temperature. Mm. Do animals all yawn the same way? So there's been a number of large-scale comparative studies where they've recorded yawn durations from over 100 mammalian and avian species, and they find that even when controlling for body size, there are very strong positive relationships between how long an animal yawns and how large and complex their brain is. So the bigger the brain, the more you're going to yawn, probably.
Right, okay.
And the last thing, and probably one of the more curious things, is that can it be contagious? So if you see someone yawning, if you're listening to this, have you yawned yet?
Even just talking about yawning.
Even just thinking about yawning can make you yawn. And yes, all right. So spontaneous yawns up to this point are sort of internally, what we've talked about is internally physiologically driven. Contagious yawns are elicited by seeing or hearing yawns in others, and they have only been documented in highly social species, humans included. There's a wide variability in that response among individuals. Mm. Some individuals are very susceptible to yawn contagion, while others are not. So I know you haven't yawned yet.
I haven't yawned yet. No. Maybe my brain's just not complex enough.
And some studies suggest that individuals' differences in empathy might be contributing to this response. So if we see someone yawn and that reflexively triggers the same response in us, that could be a kind of basic indicator of an empathetic processing or process. Mm. However, other studies have failed to show that relationship, and really the jury is still out on what causes this sort of contagious yawning.
Wow. So I don't know. I've always just believed it, and I never questioned it, because every time someone did talk about yawning, I felt like yawning. But
it exists.
Science has explained everything.
Well, they haven't. They don't know why.
No, but they don't know why. Science has explained some things. But thank you for that.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.